Well, for those of you who are opera fans, and even if you're not an opera fan, you have a wonderful opportunity to see one of the all-time great operas in the repertoire in person right here in Toledo. It's happening at the Valentine Theater next weekend, Friday evening, January 26th. It's at 7:30 p.m. and Sunday, January 28th at 2 o'clock p.m. a matinee. The opera is Rigoletto by Giuseppe Verdi. It's being put on by Toledo Opera. And I'm happy to say that I'm joined by two members of the cast, Magali Simagadez and Anusha Golosorki. I think I said that correctly.
That's
yeah,
correct.
He's nodding at me. And we also have the stage director, Jordan Braun, and conductor, Jim Mina. Welcome to all of you.
Hi, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
So we are going to talk a little bit about Rigoletto, and I also have some clips of some singing from the program. Magali, you were so nice to come in with Raffaele yesterday and record some stuff for us. So we'll listen to that during the course of the talk today. But who wants to tell us about Rigoletto a little bit? Let's say for somebody who has never been to see this opera or has never been to the opera before, who wants to take the lead and kind of give us a little preview of what to expect? Maestro, you want to talk about Rigoletto?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, Brad. You know, Rigoletto is a story about many things. At its heart, it is a story of a father who loves his daughter so much. He is widowed, a widower, and he protects this young girl from the outside world. And his attempts to protect her all backfire, tragically. Mm. And really, at the core, especially for contemporary audiences, if they focus on that relationship, on the relationship of the father and the daughter and what transpires to undo his best intentions, it is an extremely beautiful and emotional theatrical presentation, which is really what Verdi wanted at this time in his career. He was writing, as Wagner would do at the same time, he was writing music drama. It was not simply opera. It was dramatically as viable as it was musically as viable. The other layer to Rigoletto is the social commentary, the conflict between the middle class and the peasantry and the nobility. And so in this story, we have the Duke of Mantua, who uses his power and abuses his power over his nobles, and as a womanizer takes advantage of every woman he can possibly have, including the young innocent daughter of Rigoletto. Mm-hmm. And so there are two layers of plot going on in Rigoletto. And when you overlay that with some of the greatest music in all of opera, you have just a fantastic evening in the theater.
Yeah. Well, let's hear a little bit of that music and then come back and talk about this production. Magali, you were in the studio yesterday and you recorded her, I believe it's the aria and the second act, is it?
Yes, second act.
Yeah. Do you want to set this up for us?
So in this moment, she has, so prior to this moment in the first act, she has been kidnapped by the courtesans, the court
courtiers,
people,
yeah.
The courtiers. And now she's in the castle, in the Duke's castle. She's a little bit lost because she just got out of the Duke's room. Who knows what happened in there? But she discovers her dad, who's in the castle also. She doesn't even know that he's supposed to be there. So when he asks her, he says, "Why are you here? What happened?" So this aria is her telling her the story of how she was fooled by the Duke and brought there.
Okay, let's hear it. Soprano Magali Simagadez, along with pianist Kevin Bildma, here on FM 91.
Thank you.
Okay, we can all clap if we want.
Thank
we heard soprano Magaly Sumar Galdez along with pianist Kevin Bilsma, recorded in our studio yesterday afternoon. Tell us a little bit about Gilda, the character of Gilda. You know, she's seen as maybe sort of the victim in this opera. How do you think Verdi painted her in the music, and how do you see her?
Well, musically, Verdi painted her in a way more simple way than other characters. All of her music has a lightness to the line. It's very evident, and I was reading an article on how you can compare the musical material between Rigoletto and the Duke just by chromatism and the harmonies that he chose for those characters compared to her, which is very simple. So musically, she has less depth in the language that is used for her lines. As a character, the best way to describe Gilda would be, she would be kind of today's teenage girl. You see those stories on TV. They fall in love with those young adults, those men that are like maybe 20, 25, and get them to do all sorts of stuff for them. They will do drugs. They will prostitute themselves, flee their houses. But when those men turn to them and say, "I love you, baby. You're the most wonderful girl," they forget everything. So that's basically what's happening to her. She's completely in love with the Duke. And even though she sees that he's not faithful, he's a womanizer, all he cares is his own pleasure. Whenever he turns around and says, "Oh, baby, you're the one," she just forgets everything else. And she goes to actually to giving her own life to save this man because she knows nothing else. Her dad is keeping her from discovering the world around her. She's 16 years old. She's feeling these things in her body, in her gut, and she doesn't know what's happening. So she gets completely overwhelmed and just has a lot of courage in a way. She's simple, but she's naive, and she just goes for it.
Well, let's bring Anusha into the conversation about these characters. Anusha Golosorki, who is performing the role of Rigoletto. And you agree with what she's saying, Magaly, about the character of Gilda? I mean, and do you feel that Rigoletto has some complicity in how she reacts in this situation?
Well, to echo Maestro, Rigoletto is... Verdi has a penchant for writing great music for father daughters, whether it's because of his own life or whatever, that for the musicologists to decide. But And I've had the chance of seeing a number of these kinds of roles, Boccanegra, so on and so forth. But nobody is as conflicted as a father figure as Rigoletto in all the repertoire that I know of Verdi. He is conflicted because he's complicit. Mm. And he was complicit before. So not only he's not a bad person, he's just been put in a position by his frailty, by his situation as a cripple, by the social strata that does not allow him to get any higher. And he's trying very hard to be a father, which he's never been. The evidence is that he knows his daughter per se in the same apartment for 3 months.
Yeah.
And so all of a sudden, this man who's very egocentric, it's not very good at the end of the opera, he never says in a very Greek or Shakespearean curve of a tragedy, he never discovers his frailty to make a realization. At the end of the opera, he never says, my poor dead daughter. He says, oh, poor me, although the daughter is dead.
Well, and he says, Gilda, my Gilda.
Yeah, but that's a possessive my Gilda. Yeah. It's not the kind of my Gilda. It's like my wallet. I lost it. It's more in that sort of a situation. Yes, she is very naive. She's very young, and she is a teenager. And this man has now become the father of a teenager. And every father who has a teenage daughter knows how that is.
Yeah.
I'm sure. And he is completely dependent on the kindness of powers that could turn any minute. You know, any second now he could be in the dungeons.
Yeah. Well, and also his daughter, it seems to me, with what little I know about the opera, that his daughter affords him an opportunity to be the king, to be the ruler, to be the person, you know, that he can't be in the court because he is basically, you know, on the bottom rung of the ladder. But in his own family, in possessing a daughter, it gives him a sense of power as well.
I'm sure. I'm sure. I quite agree with you. But he's complicit. What we see in The Curse, which is very important for an Italian, especially Italians of that era where Verdi was writing, a maledizione was not a joke. And the maledizione is because he abused the daughter of another man, right, of a father.
Right.
And so therefore the curse comes back at him through his daughter.
Yeah. Well, the story of this opera, the themes that it deals in are so relevant to today, really. And I see the plot of this and, you know, the Duke and his philandering and all of that. You immediately think of the Me Too movement and how that resonates with an opera that was written in the 1850s. Mm-hmm. You know, but the music and the drama that is inherent in that opera is so powerful in the way that it's displayed. It's never easy with Verdi. It's never simple. There's always many layers of something going on. The stage director here, Jordan Braun, do you want to talk a little bit about your approach to this opera?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that what we started to do was we looked at the piece and we said there are so many layers here to the plot. There are so many strong characters. And we started to look at it and say, what of traditional convention that we always do we maybe not need? What do we do just because it's been done before versus what we absolutely have to have in order to tell the story? And the first thing that we did was we said, we actually do have to set it in the Italian Renaissance. It works best when it's set in the original time period, because if you try to update it, you lose some of that power dynamic where the Duke has absolute power and this stratified social construct starts to go away as we update things. And so we set it in Mantua. We set it in the traditional time period, and then we started sort of stripping away these elements that we didn't need. One of the things that we took away was the courtesans. Very often there are all of these women who never sing, who are sort of the other women in the court around the Duke, and we decided that really there's only reference in the score to a few women. And so by taking out all of the other women, we really established that it is a court full of men.
Yeah.
A man's world. And it really changes the attitude, and it changes how you feel in that first scene. It becomes a lot more sinister.
It's a subtle thing, but I can see exactly what you're talking about.
Absolutely. Yeah. And the set's pretty minimalistic. We've got some beautiful paintings on the walls, and the walls sort of spin around to put us into different scenes. And you really don't necessarily need, you know, big, grand scenery to do this piece. It's really about the voices. So yeah. That's what we started with, and we worked up from there.
Yeah. I assume you agree, Maestro. It's really about the voices, is it not?
It's always about the voices.
You know, do tell.
Well, I'm speaking, I'm preaching to the choir here, Brad. Yeah. You know, opera, if you have a wonderful production, the visual aspects of it, and even the dramatic aspects of it, but you don't have great singers, it doesn't work.
Yeah.
And by converse, you can have great singers just standing on a stage and performing, and if they're really compelling artists, it works.
Yeah.
So, you know, I know that I know the directors don't like to hear me say that, but it's true.
It is
first and foremost a vocal art form.
Yeah, it's something that I've been told also by friends and family. Sometimes they don't like the opera because of, I know what, they're not going to like this, because of the staging. Like, we kind of like it better when you just stand there and we can, like, indulge in the music and the voices, because it's so powerful.
But there are really some wonderful aspects to this production that refer back to the original play by Victor Hugo, who I remind folks actually wrote so many great works, including Les Misérables.
Right.
So this is of that period, post-French Revolution, where we're really talking about the social injustice and that conflict. And we have many of those elements in this production where you see this abuse, where you see this imposition of power, and how power can corrupt and can influence. So very relevant today.
Yeah.
You know, you mentioned this. This is why we keep performing these works. More than 150 years later, we're still performing Rigoletto and these great works from the 19th century, because they have relevance to what we do. And plus, the music is fantastic.
Yeah. Speaking of the music being fantastic, of course, probably the best known song or aria in the entire thing is sung by the gentleman who is not here this morning. That is actually
he was too shy.
The tenor, Raffaele Abete. Now he's Italian, right?
Yes,
that's correct.
You have a real international cast here, which is nice. Yeah,
Magali is Quebecois. Mm-hmm. She's from you're not from Montreal, no. But you'd.
I'm from Rimouski in Gaspésie. For people who know where that would be.
Nobody raising their hands. Okay.
No.
Well, you should go because it's really beautiful.
And Anusha, where are you from?
Well, I was actually born in Iran, in Persia, but I grew up in Los Angeles.
Oh, okay.
And I live in Germany, so I'm sort of a mixed salad.
Yeah. Well, let's listen to this aria. It's called La Donne Mobile, or Women Are Fickle. That's how it's usually translated. Sort of sets the character of the Duke in motion, even though it comes at the towards the end of the opera. We're going to hear the performance here from Raffaele Abete, performing in our studio along with pianist Kevin Bilsma here on FM 91.
Yeah.
Next time I'm going to bring out a stopwatch and see if we can time that high B natural. We heard the aria La Donne Mobile that was sung by Raffaele Abete, who is performing the role of the Duke of Mantua in Rigoletto by Giuseppe Verdi. That's happening with Toledo Opera at the Valentine Theater next weekend, week from today, in fact, from tonight. Friday, January 26th at 7:30 p.m., also Sunday, January 28th at 2 o'clock p.m., it's a matinee, conducted by James Mina, including the singers Magali Simargades and Anusha Golosorki, who are here with me, also stage director Jordan Brown. More information, by the way, at toledoopera.org or call the box office. Easy to remember the number, 419-255-SING or 419-255-7464. I should mention that Toledo Opera is a sponsor of programs here on WGTE. So continuing our discussion about Rigoletto, and I've always thought of the works of Giuseppe Verdi, I mean, his great operas, sort of falling in the same category as Shakespeare. You know, we're just going to keep doing them and doing them forever because nothing really reaches the level of artistry that this opera does and the repertoire. And I know, Anusha, you were talking about the staying power of Rigoletto.
You're a mind reader, because it's exactly that parallel with Shakespeare, all these people were genius. This is quite clear. They were touched by God. But within the catalog of their works, there are works that are even more genius. And those more genius things, Hamlet is more genius. Mm-hmm. Lear is more genius. Rigoletto is more genius because Macbeth is more genius with both of the composer and also with Shakespeare, because they address certain human traits that are timeless.
Yeah.
No matter what happens, no matter what culture practically, no matter what year, no matter what political situation, no matter what, certain relationships, certain human conditions remain constant. It's part of the DNA of being Homo sapien, I imagine. And those works are always timeless, especially if they're wrapped into incredible music.
Yeah.
But even without the incredible music, the work of Hugo, without the music by itself, is a work of genius because it is really timeless.
Victor Hugo, yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. Because human beings don't really change in their core and their base.
Yeah.
They change in their fineries, but not in the core.
Yeah.
Anyway, that was just a thought.
Well, yeah, and it's a very important thought. I mean, when people go see this opera, you know, it works on different levels. You can enjoy the melodies. You know, you may say, yeah, I've heard that song in a pizza commercial, as Magali was pointing out. You know,
come or hear it live. It's even better.
Yeah, exactly.
Get pizza after. Perfect evening.
I think you're onto something now. Pizza or waffles, one or the other.
Or waffles.
Yeah.
You know I like my waffles.
Maybe for the matinee, you can have the waffles come in. That's okay. Now I've made the soprano laugh. That means I've arrived.
It doesn't take much with Magali. She's, yeah. She's a very bubbly,
yes.
Wonderful personality.
I've been told that a few times, yes, in my life.
But you have to tone it down for Gilda, though, right? You can't be all bubbly and happy. Or, well, maybe you can.
No, yeah. Absolutely.
Well, I use some of it mostly. Well, the bubbly, happy part I keep inside. It's the maybe the egocentric singer being so happy that I can have the opportunity to sing such a wonderful role. So I take this happiness and then I transfer it into tragedy.
Right.
So you still need to have the pleasure to do those things. If you're not enjoying the singing, if you're not enjoying the music, the moment, then there's no way you can be a singer, because otherwise you're just dull. Oh, right. I'm singing, whatever.
Yeah.
So
little insight there into the singer psychology.
Well, that's
like
for
that.
Me.
But talking about going back to this idea of Rigoletto working on different levels, I mean, it engages you really emotionally, and the story is like this onion that gets peeled. And just taking the duet, like the little thing that we heard you sing earlier, if mm-hmm. we were to continue with your duet with Rigoletto,
yeah.
The levels of psychology and the little snippets of melody that are just heart-wrenching, mm. you know, that grab you. And the way that Verdi repeats things and brings them back,
yeah.
It really works on you, on your soul psychologically, without maybe even being aware of it.
Brad, this is one of the wonderful aspect of opera, is that it speaks to us on an intellectual level on an emotional level. And there are so many elements to opera that can engage an audience, whether it's the visual, whether it's the musical, whether it's the singing or the costuming or the lighting.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also the social experience of coming together as a community to have that experience and to witness a local company that's performing this great work of art. You know, you can go to the Toledo Museum and see the great works of art at your leisure. Whenever it's open and it's at your mm-hmm. convenience.
Yeah.
With great music, we don't have that luxury. We recreate these works and keep them preserved, which is part of our mission as an organization. So those who want to really enjoy and experience, especially new audiences, you should come to the opera. Yeah. It is a wonderful experience to be in the theater.
Well, you know, when you ask people for recommendations of their first opera, you get a lot of, different responses. And oftentimes they're told, oh, go see a lighthearted comedy. Go see something that's fun, that's not too taxing, that's not going to engage you too much. Well, then you leave the theater and that's basically what you have, right? That's right. Your view of opera. Mm-hmm. This is the meat and potatoes. This is the bread and butter. This is like the real thing. You know,
absolutely.
And
this
is
the waffle.
It's a great one to start with, actually.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, and people are looking for new experiences. You know, it's one thing to go to the movies and enjoy Star Wars or whatever mm-hmm. it happens to be for what it is. But what great theater does, and I always put opera in the category of great theater, it allows us to reflect. It allows us to think a bit more about our own condition and about the human experience as we're watching it unfold on stage. And this is the difference between a great masterpiece and entertainment, if you will. Yes, opera is entertaining, but it's far more than that.
Yeah. Well, it has an entertaining aspect from like the sports analogy, you know, because the singing, the challenges that are presented to the singers are quite formidable. I mean, you have to be a pretty good singer to sing this stuff. You can't just have anybody walking into these roles.
No, this is quite clear. But there's a difference. The difference is, I think, again, to echo the maestro, when you go to a movie, it's a one-way communication. You're beamed at, mm-hmm. whether you watch television, whether the product is beamed at you, and you don't have an opportunity to interrelate with it.
Right.
Theater, and especially musical theater, opera especially, offers you not only the opportunity to be beamed at, but also to relate to as things are going on. It's a two-way street. And that is not most of entertainment. Most of entertainment is one way.
Right.
You're not a participant per se, but you are when you go to live theater and live music.
Yeah, even more so than sitting and watching a regular play, because you're encouraged to show your appreciation right there. Now, the opera is being sung in Italian, right? But there are surtitles that are projected.
Yes, yes.
I would venture a guess that even with Verdi, as long as you sort of know the plot beforehand, you really don't need to know all the words.
So true, Brad. I mean, the music is so evocative.
Yeah.
And the relationships are very clear what's going on. You know, and before we were using titles, which really only came about in the mid-80s, people would read the script, they'd read the synopsis, the real devotees would listen to the score, but most people would just simply know what the story was about.
Yeah.
And they would go to the opera, and you can tell when it's a beautiful love duet, and you can tell when there's dramatic tension on stage.
Yeah.
So the titles really just reinforce that experience, that connection, if you will.
Yeah. Now, if people want to yell out bravo or brava or a clap whenever they feel like it, are you all for that?
Just like in a jazz concert.
Yeah.
That's how it was before. Oh, my God. In Mozart's time, they would scream. They would scream. The singer would hit a high note and they would scream. And you see in his letters to his father, it's like, oh, people really like that forte piano there. They went crazy. We had to do it 40 times in a row. That's really how it was. And now today, people feel shy in the opera. But
it depends where you are. If you're in Parma, believe me, they're not shy at all, whether they boo you off the stage or whether they applaud for you. You know, there are audiences that are more polite, let's say, than other audiences around the world.
Mm-hmm.
I don't necessarily think opera is very polite at all.
Yeah. Well, this is like you were talking. Opera is a contact sport, you know.
Absolutely. And it is the only contact sport in the arts that has every element of the arts in it. There is no other art form that combines the visual, the text, the music, the scenery, and so on.
Yeah.
No other. Every, not that because we're opera singers and we're really cool, but
which we
what we are. And we like waffles. But yeah. Not because of that. But really, seriously, opera is the only art form that combines the seven arts.
Yeah.
It's true.
Well, and we have a rare opportunity to see that happen because it only exists in time and space. If you don't show up, you don't experience it.
Yeah, the other thing that people find amazing when they come to the opera, especially if they're new, is that it is all acoustic.
Mm-hmm.
There's no amplification. Right. I hear, especially young people, when they come to the opera for the first time, they're so blown away by the fact that artists can stand on a stage and sing this incredible music without amplification over an orchestra and communicate in such an emotional way. It's quite a special experience, especially today when our ears have been trained to listen to amplification and everything's digitized and sanitized,
and
if you will.
And auto-tuned and...
Yeah, auto-tuned and all.
Well, I remember having the opposite experience from what you're talking about, being used to opera, knowing where voices were coming from on the stage, and then going to see a Broadway musical and having the soundtrack beamed out so that you couldn't even tell who was singing.
Right.
Unless you followed this particular character there or over there. And yeah, so this is a completely different visceral kind of experience that, another reason that I think it's so popular among the people that really love it, because it engages you in a way unlike any other stage musical form going today.
Might I add something that's a little bit different?
No.
Look, I do most of my singing in Europe, and in Europe, most of the opera houses get most of their budget from the state.
Mm.
The amount of budget that they have to raise from ticket sales is minuscule. In America, that is not the case.
Right.
And tax laws being what they are, economy being what it is a shame if this art form withers.
Mm-hmm.
And since we are, I really mean this from the other side of the world. The number of times I sing in America per year is once or twice or something like that.
Yeah.
So, but it's a shame if people do not support the arts. Without that support, if this withers, we are a much worse society.
Yeah.
We really are much poorer if we don't support. So whoever's got $5, they should donate. Really. It's a much better donation than an extra waffle at the Waffle House.
Oh,
you know?
Now she's
angry at me.
She's sending knives.
No, but
at you.
I just—I really
come
just
see
mean
the show
that.
Also, then
yeah, the people who come to see the show will come to see the show. But you have to support the arts. You have to.
Well,
support
you have
opera.
To support the arts, and you also have to acknowledge that there are some tremendous supporters of the arts who make it all happen.
Absolutely.
And in this community, we are so lucky to have people who do support the arts, and who do support the symphony, and who do support the art museum, and even the zoo, and the other nonprofit organizations that bring world-class entertainment and history and experiences to our community. So that's something that we can be
clearly
thankful
without
for.
That we wouldn't be here. But the more the merrier. That's the way I see it.
I feel like poor Jordan has been sitting over there, nice and quiet. Do you have anything that you want to add to this conversation?
Come see the show.
That's a good point to leave us with. Before I let you go, however, I do want to mention the Tuesday talk, which is happening on Tuesday, not on Wednesday, but on Tuesday. Next Tuesday is January 23rd. This is at the Registry Bistro Gallery. So if you want to continue this conversation and learn more about Rigoletto, just go to that Tuesday talk. It's open to the public. The Registry Bistro Gallery in the Secor Building downtown. It starts at 5:30 p.m. next Tuesday, January 23rd. Maestro James Mina will be there in part of the panel discussion led by Sarah Jobin, who is a conductor with the Toledo Symphony and Toledo Opera. And what are y'all going to talk about?
And there will be wine.
Oh, okay. Well, that's all we needed to say.
It's opera. There's usually wine involved.
Yeah.
We were going to do a really deep dive into Rigoletto, preparing folks for what they're going to see, what they're going to hear. Talk about the background a bit. So it's really an excellent introduction for those who are coming to the opera to get your feet wet, as it were.
Great. Well, my thanks to all of you for coming in today, Maestro James Mina, our stage director Jordan Brown, soprano Magali Simar-Galdez, and our Rigoletto, Anusha Golosorki. And congratulations on this wonderful performance. We wish you best of luck next weekend. Again, the performances are a week from tonight, Friday, January 26th at 7:30 p.m., and Sunday, January 28th, there's a matinee at 2 o'clock p.m. More information at toledoopera.org. This is at the Valentine Theater, by the way. toledoopera.org or 419-255-SING. That's 7464. And I'll leave us with one more little musical example. This is a duet between Gilda and the Duke. You want to set this up for us just briefly?
So Gilda gets really excited. So the Duke just basically entered in her house without knocking. So she was a little surprised by that. And after 5 minutes of love singing, then he goes away again. And she's very happy. And now she's completely in love.
Yeah.
So they're saying goodbye. See you later. 17 times, maybe 45.
Yeah.
Very happily.
They're excited, to say the least. Yeah. Soprano Magali Simar-Galdez and tenor Raffaele Abete, along with pianist Kevin Bilsma, performing an excerpt from Rigoletto here on FM 91.
Che mami, de, ripetimi,
modeste,
come felice,
il nome vostro ditemi, saperlo non mi dice.
Gualtier Maltese, studente sono, e poi.